Thank you for worshiping with us, whether you're in person or online. We're glad to have you here. And if you don't know me, my name is Adrian. I have the pleasure of being the associate pastor here at Bethel Church. And I just want to start with a question. Have you ever been in a situation where you needed help, but you weren't willing to ask for it? Wives, I hope you're not elbowing your husband if you got lost and he wouldn't ask for directions. But one time as a date, I decided to take my wife, Kirsten, floating down the mighty, beautiful North Saskatchewan River in Edmonton. If anyone, yes, I know, clap for me, it was a great date. But if you're not familiar with Edmonton or the mighty, muddy North Saskatchewan River, it weaves its way through Edmonton, goes from the southwest to the northeast, goes through. And I'll just tell you right off the bat, it is not a fast-flowing river. And I didn't do as much research as I would now for how long it would take to go certain distances. And we started in the late summer, and I didn't take into account sunset times either. And so here we were, we by the time we finally got there, we parked one car way too far down the river, downstream, and then drove our other car and our floaty through our phones and our wallet and keys in a Ziploc bag, left our shoes and anything else possibly warm in the car, and started floating down. And I won't even say how far we made it, but it wasn't far before we started wondering, this is taking way too long. And realizing that it was starting to get cold, the sun was starting to set, and so in desperation, I slipped off, left my body on the floaty, I think it was a flower floaty, and it was very manly, and started paddling down the river with my legs. And after a short time of frustration and realizing, getting worried, a guy came. We heard a hum of a Zodiac engine. A Zodiac, it's a strong inflatable boat with a powerful outboard engine, and the guy came by and started asking us, well, where are you guys going to? And he scoffed as soon as I said, he's like, that's a long ways. And I said, you're telling me about it. And he started kind of asking us questions, berating me a little bit. Kirsten was wearing a life jacket. I was not. We only had one. And then he asked if we wanted a ride. And before even consulting my wife, I instantly said, no, we're okay, thank you. And he said, well, you should be on the other side of the river. It's faster. I said, well, thanks for the information. And I said no, and he zipped off after a little bit, I think after a couple more comments. And so I sat there, and that's when I really started to get worried and thinking, oh no. I started making a little bit of tentative plans. I knew that there was a dog park nearby that maybe I could get out and call a friend to pick me up. But my wife is severely allergic to dogs, and we didn't have shoes and have to tromp through a bush. And then a dog park. I won't fill out that illustration anymore for you guys with bare feet walking through a dog park. Off-leash dog park. So I was trying to come up with some plans, and there we were floating down the river. And that's where I'm going to leave us for now. This morning, we're starting a series on the Psalms of Ascent. There are these psalms that the people of Israel would sing and would use to worship where they would make their way to Jerusalem. They would literally ascend towards Jerusalem. Jerusalem was built in a mountainous region, and there were mountains nearby, like the Mount of Olives. If you're familiar with the stories and life of Jesus, he would spend time praying there, and as well as Mount Zion, which is in a lot of the Psalms and where people would meet with God. And so thus, these songs were sung, and they were remembered on their way to Jerusalem, where they literally would ascend on their way there. And they were a reminder for God's people of his faithfulness and what he had done in their character, as well as his history and faithfulness over the time. And so these pilgrims would have literally looked up to the mountains as they were singing these songs. And the four psalms that we're looking at over this short series is going to be looking at expressing some of the emotions that we can experience along the journey of life, both as individuals and journeys through seasons as a church. And they help us to remember some of the characteristics of God. And so it's really good to be reminded about who God is in the midst of our life circumstances. You know, maybe this journey of life, I don't know what your particular season is. Maybe you're in a season of great joy and a great time, or maybe you're in a season of difficulty, but there's various ways that we respond, maybe even to the season of transition that we are in as Bethel Church, as we search for our next lead pastor. And here's a plug, come tonight and we'll join in prayer together. But some of us, maybe you're feeling excited and hopeful for the next season. Or maybe you're feeling nervous and worried, or maybe you're even feeling frustrated, and maybe you're upset. And most likely, all of us are experiencing a mixture of emotions or anything in between, those of us who would call Bethel Church home. And for those of you who are new, we're just in the middle of a transition season as our lead pastor just resigned a couple short weeks ago, and we're beginning the search for a new lead. But we can be remembered, no matter how we're feeling, no matter where we are in a season as a church and as individuals, we can be reminded with these psalms of God's faithfulness to us. We can help to express our emotions in helpful and meaningful ways, which is expressing them to God. And this is something that these psalms of ascent help us with. The pilgrims would have came to Jerusalem 3 times a year and would have sung these psalms as a way of remembering what God is. And they would literally be traveling to where God's presence dwelt, which was in the temple of Jerusalem. They would have intentionally traveled here 3 times a year in order to be near to God. But for us now, we don't have to go to a specific place or a specific location to be in God's presence, because God's Holy Spirit is everywhere, and whoever has a relationship with God takes his presence with us wherever we go. So we don't have to pilgrimage to a place of worship, but we do get the opportunity to gather in person and online as a church each week as an opportunity to worship together. So maybe we can imagine a little bit of what it's like to gather in a specific place to worship God. And as Bethel Church, we're privileged right now to have the opportunity to gather in person. And we even maybe don't even think of it as a privilege before, but during the season of COVID, we all had frustration at not being able to gather in person. And so we realized how great it is and how we can worship together in person and how that is. And so these psalms even help us to process the season that we've been through of COVID. And so the psalms are so helpful to process, no matter where we are as individuals or as a church. And today, we're going to be going through Psalm 121. And so I'd love it if you would turn there in your own hard copy Bible or digital Bible. And this psalm specifically is about the journey of one's own life. It shows us that we can trust in God and be confident of his tireless care for us. And unlike many of the psalms, this isn't actually addressed to God. It's actually addressed by the psalmist to a human listener. So it's addressed for us now as human listeners. It's addressed to us. So follow along with me, but it'll be on the screen in front of you or behind me. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. I love the way this psalm starts. The imagery that comes to mind for me is the psalmist's eyes had been downcast. They had been looking down, maybe at the path, maybe at their feet. Maybe they had been weighed down by life's struggles. Maybe they had a burden on them that they didn't know how to carry. Maybe they had a problem that they didn't know how to solve. Maybe they were experiencing hardship and negative emotions and hard things, and they didn't know what to do. And yet, then they make a deliberate choice to lift up their eyes. And when they lift up their eyes, they see the sight of mountains. Now, for you, what comes to mind when you think of mountains? What feelings come up for you when you look around and see mountains? for me, I love mountains. I absolutely love mountains. And I love getting to live where we do in the Okanagan, because when I get to look around, I get to see the mountains and constantly be reminded of God's bigness. You know, when I first came here to the Okanagan and had accepted a job and was moving here, I left Edmonton on a late spring snowstorm, which maybe you can't imagine if you've lived here your whole life, but a late spring snowstorm. It was whiteout conditions. You could barely see where you're going, flurries everywhere. And as I started driving further south and the snow started clearing, but it was still gray and overcast. And then finally, eventually, it was still kind of snow, but the clouds cleared and opened up and you could actually see the sun. And literally, by the time I hit Salmon Arm and all the way back, spring had actually sprung. It felt like a metaphor for coming and waking. And you know they have that saying, the grass isn't greener on the other side. It only looks greener on the other side. Well, it literally was greener on the other side. And so I don't know what they're talking about. There wasn't even grass in Edmonton. I think it was just yellow stubble. But the grass was greener on the other side. And I still love living here, and I still love looking up to the mountains because they remind me of how big God is. That God created these massive mounds of stone that are just a speck of dust for him. They're absolutely nothing. So they remind me of his bigness and my smallness. And so no matter how big my problems feel like, they're small compared to God. And so I just love that. And I hope that you guys, if you get the pleasure of living here, that you also get that, even half as much as I do, and you'd still love the mountains. But the psalmist, he looks up towards the mountains, and he asks this legitimate and important question that all of us should ask. Where does your help come from? Or even put differently, who do you turn to when you need help? If you're in a car accident, for example, who's the first person you call? Maybe your spouse or maybe a friend. Or for me, when I was in a fairly serious collision, the first person I called was my mom. And her and I had some disagreements as a young adult and had some issues. But when I was in that car accident, I called her, she picked up, and she came and helped me through the accident, helped me kind of calm down and deal with it all, and gave me a ride home so I didn't have to call a taxi, which is great, because I didn't have a car anymore. But who is your source of help? Maybe you need help moving. Who's your friend that you call that would be willing to pick up and not be busy that day when they hear what you're doing? Or who's your source of help if you have a problem that needs solved, or you need someone to give you some wisdom for a decision? Hopefully all of us have somebody in our life or people or maybe multiple people that we can turn to when we're in trouble. And but no matter what, the recognition that the psalmist gives is ultimately our source of help comes from God. And so even if you do not have anyone in your life, maybe you're in a season where you feel like there's no friends that you could call for help, no matter what, you always have God there to help you. That's what the psalmist recognizes. And so we need to know that no matter who else we might trust or put our hope in, we should put our hope and our trust in God first. God isn't meant to be our insurance plan if nothing else works out. He's not meant to just be our last-ditch effort. If nobody else picks up the phone, then we'll call God and talk to him. Then we'll talk to him in prayer. If the money in my savings account runs out and that's the only time that you think to ask God and trust him with your finances, then there's a serious issue there. And I think it's absolutely important to have friends and family to help and support us. And I'd be kidding myself to say that my wife, Kerrison, doesn't mean an incredible amount to me, that she helps me constantly. She's a constant help to me. She's my safe place to land, my sounding board, the one who calls me out if I'm getting off course. But she's not Jesus. She cannot and could not be expected to be everything to me. She's certainly helpful, and she is one of the most common people that God uses to show me love, but she can never replace Jesus or my love for him and my need for him. And it's like that in any of us. God gives us relationships. He gives us a church and a community and a family, and these things are meant to add to our lives, and they're important, but they're never a replacement for God. And so the psalmist reminds the listener we need to trust in God first, but then he reminds us that the Lord is the maker of heaven and earth. And it seems a little weird to bring this up as the illustration or the point, But his point is to remind us that not only does God have a history of being faithful, but that he reminds us of the scope of God's power. God created everything. He created everything out of nothing. And so nothing is outside of his grasp or ability to help. No power in the universe could possibly hinder his unbounded power. So God is able to do anything. And so help in this psalm, he talks about our help comes from the Lord. And this help is actually synonymous with deliverance. It recalls God's involvement in the history of Israel. And so Israel, they would remember when they would sing these psalms of ascent, they would remember what God had done to them and had done for them and for their previous generations. They would remember God had never let them down, that God had been faithful no matter what, that no matter, even if God's people had walked away for a time and had went into exile or had other issues, even in the midst of God's discipline, God never disappointed them. They may have walked away from God, but God never walked away from them. That God was always there. So as the pilgrims would walk towards Jerusalem, they would recall God's power and his might and his faithfulness, even in the midst of their own faithlessness and their failures. God never let them down. And can you recall in your own life times that God helped you through your years, whether they're many or few? Can you recall stories of when God helped you, even if there was nobody else there to help you? Can you remember times of God's faithfulness? Even if you struggle at times to feel like you have much going good for you in your life, maybe you're having a really hard season, you're having a really hard time, maybe you feel like nobody else is there for you. The one thing that you can remember and you can appreciate that God has done for you and has given you is a relationship with him. He has delivered you from eternal separation from him and has given you a gift of infinite worth, which is a relationship with him. Not just as a cosmic insurance plan that, yeah, when I die, I get to go to heaven, but he gives you a relationship where he's with you and walks with you each and every day here and now. Even if you have nothing else, you have God. And beyond that, as a church, those of you who have called Bethel Church home for some time could recall stories of God's faithfulness over the years. Recall stories of seasons where God has moved so powerfully and we have seen God move. And Bethel is almost 100 years old. And God has been doing things so well. And it's a privilege to be a part of our history and to join with what God is doing over the next 100 years if the Lord should tarry. But as faithful as God has been and his track record of good acts that we can recall and think on individually and as a church, there's something even more important that we can cling to. And that's that it's fundamentally part of who God is that he cares for us. It's part of God's very nature as creator to care for his creation. He's not passive in his care. He's not just sitting watching. He's actually active. He's a living God, both of creation and history itself. And so we know that we should trust and put our hope in God first. And second of all, that God's help is always available, but we need to ask for it. You know, God is always willing and available and ready to help us. But even though that help might always be available, sometimes we need to actually be willing to ask for it. God may know that we need his help, but sometimes, like a parent that wants their kids to learn something first, he often waits for us to ask for the help. He allows us to struggle through our own difficulties so that we remember that we need his help. And so God gives us enough freedom often to live and to struggle through life on our own. And there are certainly times that God allows us to go through times of hardship or struggle or trial simply to refine our character. But sometimes God allows us to go through things because it's our own pride and stubbornness that prevent us from asking for help. And sometimes we get mad at God for not stepping in and fixing a situation, but then when you think about it, you realize you never actually even asked God for his help in the first place. It's like people that blame God for allowing suffering in the world or allow poverty or slavery or these things to happen. But if you follow up and ask questions, well, have you ever asked God? Do you pray to God and ask him to intervene? Or you ask them, well, what are you doing? Do you give to the poor? Do you help the needy? Do you do something to stop slavery in the world? Do you do these things? The answer is often no. And so sometimes we expect God to act, but we never actually ask him to. And sometimes we have that in our own situation. And James, the brother of Jesus, says this, or wrote this in chapter 4, verses 2 to 3. He says, "You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures." So James is teaching us that sometimes we're limited because we have the wrong motives or the wrong desires. Maybe we're asking for things selfishly. Or sometimes we're simply limited because we fail to actually ask for God what we want. But the reality is that there are times when we ask for something or we ask for help or we want God to change our situation and he simply doesn't. And the truth is that if he doesn't change our situation, there's nothing or no one else that could possibly help us. But if he does help us, then nothing can possibly stop him. From here on, the rest of the psalm, the first two verses are the picture that God is our help. He's our source of help. And from verse 3 on, the imagery, the predominant idea, changes to God being our guard. Along the journey of life, it says that God will not let your foot slip. And this is both a double meaning for along the journey, along your course, he won't let you veer off. He tries to keep you on course. He corrects you and guides you. And the other thing is that he won't let you fall into eternal separation with him, as the Hebrews would have thought of it as Sheol, or as we usually call it as hell. God won't just let you slip in. He won't let you eventually. He'll relentlessly pursue you and guide you and correct you and challenge you and call you home. And so he won't slumber or sleep. He won't fall asleep. He won't stop watching you. He's relentless in his care of you. He watches over individuals just as he watched over Israel and as he watches over our church. Just as he cared for us during the season of COVID, he cares for us during this transition time. And beyond just watching and observing and guarding, it actually says that he comforts us in our times of trouble. He gives us shade. He gives us comfort. He helps us. He protects us along the journey. The psalmist gives the illustration of he protects us from the blazing heat of the sun as well as the freezing cold of the moon. And it's a serious issue, the dangers of the sun. If any of you have ever had times when you've become super dehydrated or suffered from heat stroke, it's no laughing matter. Myself, when I was younger and in the trades, I'm telling all my mistakes this morning. You guys can't judge me too harshly. You were young once too. Some of you still really are. You all are. You're all very young. Anyways, I'm going to stop digging and just keep going. Oh, dear. Anyways, one time when I was younger and in the trades, I was working in a really hot mechanical room, retrofitting the heating system with a journeyman, and we didn't drink enough water. It was very hot and humid, and the thing that started getting to be a really good idea was a really huge ice-cold Slurpee. So we ran down to the convenience store, grabbed a way too big of a Slurpee, and powered it back really fast. And I don't know if any of you guys have ever been dehydrated, but the worst thing you can possibly do is drink a giant sugary Slurpee. Both of us, it almost knocked us flat on our bums of being dizzy, and we felt awful the rest of the day and realized later the next day, even as we could barely work, that we had suffered a little bit of heat stroke and had made it worse by drinking a big Slurpee. And so I know the dangers of being too hot and the dangers that God is offering protection from. And it's this metaphor that God protects us from these dangers. But we actually, the thing with shade is you actually have to be willing to step underneath the shade. There can be a tree out in the middle of the desert, but if you're not willing to stand underneath it and place yourself under its protection, it won't protect you. And so God is offering this shade and this protection, but we need to actually be willing to place ourselves under it. And the idea of the moon is this freezing cold of these enemies and the dangers of the night, the wildlife and the bandits that could be out there. And so God offers protection, not just during the day, but during the night as well. But we need to place ourselves under his care. And so it says that the Lord will protect us from all harm. And God's help is always available, but we need to ask for it. And again, this isn't merely passive observance, but active and living help. But we need to know that life struggles remind us of our need for God. You know, God promises protection for us. But this protection isn't necessarily all-encompassing. It doesn't mean you'll never stub your toe. It never means that you'll never have suffering. It doesn't mean that you won't have pain this side of heaven. Instead, what Jesus is offering, what God is offering to us, is himself. He's offering to be with us and offer a relationship and to help us along each step of the journey. But sometimes the journey of life is painful. And sometimes out of love, God allows us to experience painful things and hardships, both individually and as a church, because they help us to grow. In Luke 21, 18 to 19, Jesus says this, Luke recorded, "You will be betrayed even by parents, brothers and sisters, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. Everyone will hate you because of me, but not a hair of your head will perish. Stand firm and you will win life." You know, this is funny. This isn't one of the verses that they usually put on evangelism brochures or like things that they hand out. Everyone will hate you because of me. It's usually not like a plug of like, hey, be a Christian, everyone will hate you. Isn't that be great? No. But Jesus is legitimately warning his disciples. But he does have a promise that we should hold on to. But not a hair of your head will perish. Stand firm and you will win life. You know, Jesus has a bigger picture than our comfort this side of heaven. Jesus has a bigger picture in mind than whether or not we are enjoying the journey every step of the way. And Jesus' picture is eternity. He doesn't just want happy people on this side of heaven. He wants people who would experience eternal joy forever with him. And so that is what Jesus has in mind. And so yes, we'll experience hardships. Yes, we'll experience pain. And that doesn't mean that God's not there, but he promises to protect us from eternal harm, to protect us from experiencing eternity without him. So sometimes God allows us to experience hardship because it teaches us to look around for the true source of help. Sometimes God allows us to experience a little pain because it reminds us how great our need is for him. You know, if we never had struggles in life, if life was always great and going on, if life was always just fantastic, then we wouldn't necessarily even remember how important our relationship with Jesus is. You know, if we always had people there to comfort us and provide our needs and provide our wants, then we would forget that God is the true source of our help and our desires and our wants, that nothing else can satisfy us except for him. So help doesn't come to people from the place where sin directs us to look, but where the soul of David returned to receive it, which is from God's Spirit. We need to remember our source of help is from God. And no matter the season that we're going through, no matter the hardships that we go through as a church, we need to remember that God is here. God is with us, and God cares for and loves this church more than any one of us possibly could imagine. And the great theologian and pastor who experienced hardship under the Nazis and who helped the German church in its time of difficulty, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he wrote this about God's protection of the church. It says, "God's church is exhausted here and encompassed by dangers. Our comfort is that God will guard us his inheritance and lead us home to himself." Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in the hardest season of pastoral ministry you could possibly imagine, that the church was constantly being persecuted under the Nazis, that he trusted that God would protect them. His comfort is that God will guard them. And no matter the difficulties that we go through, no matter the season of COVID and the season of transition, and as individuals, whatever season you are going through, you can trust in Jesus. Just as the old song that we sung earlier, it's so sweet, 'tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. to trust him at his word, that he will protect us, that he cares for us. Now, remember the story I started at the beginning. Well, here Kirsten and I are floating down the mighty North Saskatchewan River, and I was submerged in the water, starting to get cold, starting to get really uncomfortable. And God at that moment reminded me of my need for him. And so finally, foolishly waiting so long, but finally I prayed the simplest prayer I probably have ever imagined, but my prayer was, help. I admitted, Lord, I was foolish. Lord, I made a lot of mistakes along the way. Lord, I should have accepted that man's help in the first place. And I didn't want to because I was prideful. And so I had been apologizing to Kirsten, and a couple minutes later, after I had prayed that prayer, I heard the hum of a Zodiac engine. And here he comes back around the corner, and he said, you know, I was almost halfway back, and I couldn't leave. Just there was something inside of me telling me I just couldn't leave without asking you one more time if you want to ride home. And you know, he didn't serve the Lord. It was very clear with his language of telling me and putting me in my place and the humbling talk I had on the way back. But God still used him to save me from my own silliness. And so the ride back in the Zodiac was a humbling affair of him undressing me up and down, of how I should have planned it differently, how I should have done this. Well, at least my wife was wearing a life jacket, but where was mine? And I had a little other side effects. I swallowed some of the muddy North Saskatchewan River, and I had probably one of the worst stomach flus I'd ever had after that. So the Lord used that too to remind me of my own need to ask for help the first time. But anyway, God allows us sometimes to go through hardships, and sometimes it's because of our own silliness and our own mistakes. Sometimes, maybe even though we're grown up, we can still act like a toddler who's just learning to do things for the first time, and we just stamp our feet and say, no, I do it. We want to do it on our own sometimes, but that is not what God calls us to. What God calls us to is remember our need for him. He loves us like a father who wants to help his kids. He loves this church like our creator, that he wants to see us flourish and grow. And our job in this is to trust him and to lean into him and the promises he has and know that he is for us. If God is for us, who can stand against us? You know, God longs to encompass us in his love, but he waits for us to ask for help and recognize our need for him. And we can trust in the promise of the psalm that under his care and talking to him daily in prayer, we will not stumble and we will make it through this journey of life as individuals and as a church. We may have struggles, but we will overcome them, not in our own strength, but with his help and his strength. I just want to close with two great verses from Psalm 23, which I'm sure is familiar to lots of you. It says, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Would you join me in prayer? Jesus, I thank you that you love us, that you care for us, that you offer us your help, even when sometimes we're too stubborn to accept it or to ask for it, but you long to care for us. And Lord, whatever season we as individuals are in the midst of this morning, whether it's a time of great joy or whether it's a time of hardship and sadness and grief, and however we're feeling about this transition, Lord, season as a church, I pray that you would help us to pour out our hearts to you, that you would comfort us, that you would be our shade during the day, and you would protect us during the dark nights, Lord, and that you would be with us in the midst of the darkest valleys, Lord. We know that you are with us. And just as you said in Matthew recorded, that your yoke is easy and your burden is light. Lord, there is time that life feels heavy and feels hard. And so I pray that you would comfort us and help us, and you would alleviate the burden as we ask. And Lord, the times that we go through struggles and hardships, that we would trust you, that we would bring those struggles to you, Lord, and you would give us the strength that we need and the help that we need each and every day to get through this journey called life. So thank you for who you are. Thank you for your love, your kindness, your goodness. Thank you that you love Bethel Church, that you love each and every person that is listening and in person here right now, Lord. And I just pray that you would just guide us, Lord. Be with us, comfort us. We thank you. We ask for these things in your mighty and precious name. Amen.